Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents How to Ruin Your Reputation in 10 Days by Harmony Williams, narrated by Heather Wilds. Chapter 1. July, 1814. 10 days until the season's end. Late evening.
Those freckles... What an unfortunate blemish! I gritted my teeth.
Outrage quickened the movement of my hand, vigorously fanning my face to ward away the sweat beading my upper lip.
I'm not a potted fern. I can hear you. How could I not?
The matron sat a mere 4 feet away, and given the volume of sound, I suspected gossips heard it all the way to the Americas. Those nearby aborted their conversations for only the briefest of moments— a blessing in disguise. No one considered my plight notable enough to warrant a glance of pity, except Mother. Her hot stare threatened to set my shoulders ablaze. To the elderly woman at her elbow, she said, "An unfortunate blemish, yes, but it shouldn't hurt her chances overmuch. I've spent 5 seasons without a single offer, Mother. Obviously my freckles had withered my chances already, that, or the fact that I cared more for plants than for marriage."
Mother confessed in an exaggerated whisper. "We expect to make a match by the end of the season."
She lowered her voice, but not enough. I heard, along with every married or widowed woman clustered around her thin blonde form,
"Lord Valentia has settled a considerable sum for her dowry."
I groaned aloud.
Not the dowry.
5 seasons had passed with nary an appearance from Mother. Why had she suddenly chosen to take an interest in my unmarried state? The last flourish of music swallowed up my noise of dismay. Delicate debutantes, in the pale colours of youth, bent like flowers in the wind to their black-garbed partners. The giggling young women clustered together to gossip over the dancing prowess of their partners, as the men scattered in search of lemonade or other refreshments. The sudden crush of people around the perimeter of the dance floor was, in itself, a sort of dance, one to which no one seemed to know the steps.
"Francine!"
Mother called from behind me. I ignored her. I sidled to my left, away from the reputation-gripping gossips, Mother included. Not that I had much of a reputation to tarnish. That would require suitors. Nothing good could come of her announcing my dowry and wishing my presence. I smelled a match being made. I'd rather die a spinster than marry someone who only wanted me for my money. Plenty of lazy fops were interested in that. Papa weeded them out with a ruthlessness that made me cringe. No mere mister would do for the daughter of the Baron of Valentia. Only a lord. And a lord with a money problem I did not want.
"Francine, come here a moment."
"When the sun rises in the west, Mother." Salvation arrived in the form of a matron's scathing comment.
"Such a shame you never bore him a son, my dear. Only one scrawny daughter."
Mother's voice brightened immediately.
"Actually, moulding the gender of a child before birth is quite simple. You only need to know what to eat. In Francine's case..."
Beaming with relief, I wedged between the two nearest groups of chattering noblemen and noblewomen, effectively disappearing into the crush. Mother never could resist a dissertation on the merits of a plant. Dotting the sweat from my forehead with a handkerchief, I considered where to take refuge next. The lilting sound of Rose's well-worn pleasantries shadowed my snail-paced progress. Glancing over my shoulder, I noticed a golden head, taller than most of the men. No doubt she'd spotted me. I loved Rose dearly, but ever since her marriage last season, she'd seemed to take my lack of a husband as a personal affront and make it her business to graft a match. My heart leaped into my throat. I redoubled my efforts to escape. Rose danced through the crowd like a royal dance master. Men and women alike melted away from her winning smile to let her pass. That ability would be handy just about now. Unfortunately, it wasn't one I'd inherited. Invisibility seemed to be my talent. Clearing my throat sometimes couldn't budge a group. The man rooted in my path seemed resolute to ignore me. I didn't recognize him from his dusky jacket or the back of his brown-haired head. Then again, I just described half the men of the ton.
"Excuse me," I shouted above the chatter, to ensure he heard. "Would you mind moving a step to your left, sir? I'd love to pass through." The man turned. Although not the tallest man in the room, he loomed over me. My neck ached from craning it back to examine his face. A frown turned down the pleasing curve of his mouth. His earthy eyes narrowed as he examined me from beneath heavy brows. His hair was swept almost carelessly over his narrow forehead, no doubt a cultivated look, one paired with fashionably groomed side whiskers. Curiously enough, his evening wear was at least 3 years old, if I recalled the fashions correctly. I didn't recognize him, considering I all but lived at balls during the past 5 seasons. I'd thought to have met all the men in London. Apparently not. His frown eased, replaced by the curious lift of one corner of his mouth. "I don't believe it. You haven't changed a bit." I peered over my shoulder, trying to gauge the swiftly diminishing distance between Rose and myself. Absently, I answered. "I believe you've mistaken me for someone else, if you'll excuse me." I dipped into a curtsy, prompting him to incline his head. Sometimes I adored the stiff etiquette dictating the ton's every move. With his attention directed elsewhere, I dashed around him. The crowd thinned, but not enough for me to gain freedom. Behind the stranger loomed others, most I'd met, but some faces I didn't recognize. Many likely returned from war this season, now that Napoleon had been exiled to Elba. The crowd to my rear parted enough for a sliver of my friend's svelte form to peek through. Her periwinkle blue eyes narrowed with determination as she spotted me. No doubt she suspected I'd been evading her. In an instant, her aggressive expression withered, replaced by a broad smile baring her upper gums. Her genuine smile. Her beady gaze measured the two groups yet between us, as though she contemplated how best to wage war against this last obstacle. Behind her, Mother elbowed through the crowd. I turned away. Could my luck get any worse? The hounds of hell nipped at my heels this evening. A familiar voice wheedled its way past my panicked mind. A woman harped loudly about the objectification of women through dance, no doubt in response to an invitation to join the next set. My knees weakened in relief. Mary. I lunged toward the sound. In an ungraceful display of snarled limbs, I latched onto Mary's arm and steered her away from the baffled and belittled suitor. "Quick! I need your help!" Mary's mouth puckered. Her eyes narrowed behind her spectacles. She brushed an errant lock of black hair from her forehead. "How can I help?" I loved Mary just as dearly as Rose, but my friends acted like two guardian angels perched upon either shoulder, each steering me down a different path, neither path a particularly pious one. Guilt flushed my cheeks as I muttered. "Rose is trying to convince me to marry some womanizing old lord." For all I knew, it might be true. Still, the moment Mary's eyebrows knit together in outrage, I inwardly winced. "Forgive me, Rose." That expression never meant well for any men in the vicinity. Mary might be small, only an inch taller than me, and slimmer, since she often forgot to eat, but her sharp tongue, when it came to her zany ideas about women's freedom, was legendary, and liberally used. If Rose advocated for marriage, Mary firmly believed no woman should give herself to a man like a common possession. Mary glided forward, jostling me into the animated crowd. I stumbled between two young paramours and dashed for the terrace doors. Behind me, the crowd's chattering nearly devoured Mary's characteristically sharp voice. "Rose, how can you interfere in Francine's happiness like this?" I hunched down, sensing Rose scan the crowd. Thankfully, I crouched short enough that she shouldn't be able to spot me. "You stay out of this. It is her future happiness I'm concerned about. Where is she?" I winced. Hopefully she hadn't spotted me where I'd snuck away to. I'd enclose myself in the withdrawing room if I didn't think she'd find me there. Rose had the nose of a bloodhound when sniffing out my whereabouts. I didn't wait to hear more. I dashed through the tall open terrace doors. My shoes slapped against the stone as I slipped into the humid summer air. The sweltering heat from indoors evaporated somewhat in the whisper of a breeze. It teased a tendril of hair in front of my face. I battered the brown lock away. I breathed easier, out of sight of my meddling friends and baffling mother. Even so, I was far from safe.
Anyone to meander by the open doors would notice me at the rail. With renewed breath, I barreled down the stairs. My toes kissed the well-groomed pebbles of the walkway. I tucked myself between two shrubberies, searching for an alternate path. There, the tiniest sliver of gravel winding between the trees. I started forward, cringing as a rip rent the air. No, not the dress. I might have to hide here for the rest of the night, maybe for the rest of eternity. Very, very carefully, I twisted to examine the train of my gown. It flowed loose from the ribbon tied just beneath my breasts. I glimpsed the snag near the hem. Short, stubby thorns had the yellow muslin ensnared. Prunus spinosa, blackthorn, used to hem in cattle and, apparently, me. Not a usual addition to a garden, either. The flowers bloomed and died before the leaves budded, leaving only fat bunches of sour berries. The bush wasn't especially pretty or sweet-smelling. And a pain if you ever found yourself ensnared by one. Bracing my feet, I reached behind me at an awkward angle. The muscles in my back protested. I breathed in short, sharp pants as I bent near double backward to grasp the offending branch. The world twisted sideways. The sharp thorns pricked my fingers through my white gloves, but the fabric saved my flesh from being turned into fertilizer. Rising to the elbow, the glove saved my lower arms from the shrub's battle scars, too. As I tugged my hem free and reversed to a normal position, a muscle in my back twinged. The pain quickly subsided. A heavy sigh of relief escaped my lips. "A beauty though you are, I wouldn't mistake you for a flower." I stiffened at the voice. I recognized it. From where? "I can see you, you know." Pursing my lips together, I turned around. A man stood on the gravel walkway, with eyebrows raised. The same stranger I'd exchanged words with in the ballroom. He was alone. Although I didn't doubt some of the other guests had scattered in the sultry summer air, no one lingered nearby to chaperone us. On principle, I'd never much cared whether or not I had a chaperone. If I was daubed unmarriageable, well, I'd never found anyone I cared to marry for love or convenience. I had everything I needed. With this handsome stranger, our solitude seemed dangerous. Men didn't tend to notice me. With beautiful and outspoken best friends, I tended to fade into the background. I preferred it that way. So why had he followed me? "I wasn't trying to hide," I said. "The hem caught on a bush."
"Ah."
He gave a gallant bow. "In that case, may I offer my assistance to a damsel in distress?" Lifting my hem, now free of the bushes, I said, "No need. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'll be on my way." I turned to make my escape, daintily picking my way between the thorny bushes to the slim path beyond.
"Off to meet with a lover."
The words stopped me cold. Goosebumps of irritation rose on the bare flesh of my upper arms. Turning on my heel, I tramped through the undergrowth to the path on which he stood, not so careful about my dress now. I didn't care, as long as I put him in his place. Although he loomed over me by at least 6 inches, I straightened my spine and met him nose to nose, or rather, nose to collarbone. I donned my best imitation of Mary at her most righteous. If she'd been here, he'd be in for an even worse tongue flaying. "What sort of hoyden do you take me for?"
"One who is impeccably dressed."
I slapped him across the cheek. My palm smarted from the contact. Mary would have cheered me on if she'd been here. Rose would have berated me for not stealing a kiss. I shook my head. They ruled my thoughts even while occupying a different room. The stranger worked his jaw. I'd turned his clean-shaven cheek red with the strike.
"Forgive me," he muttered.
Although he stopped rubbing his cheek, he continued to flex his jaw as though he wanted to.
"I keep forgetting you're not my sister."
My hand, poised to deliver another strike, dropped like a bullet to my side. His sister? Was that meant to be an insult? "I beg your pardon?"
"You really don't recognize me, do you?"
My heart pounded from the confrontation. Hard to concentrate, I confined the jittery excitement as I examined him in detail. Beneath the light of the golden lamp and the wan moon, he looked no more familiar than he had in the brighter light of the ballroom.
Need I repeat myself? You have mistaken me for another woman.
A wicked twinkle entered his gaze. I'll never forget the first girl I kissed.
My head spun. Now I know you're mistaken. I've never kissed a man.
No? His grin widened. Maybe this will refresh your memory.
Leaning forward, he captured my wrists in each hand, no doubt afraid I'd slap him again, and with good reason. He held me still as I squirmed and planted a chaste kiss on my cheek. The tender skin there tingled. Dropping his hands, he moved back a pace. Not nearly far enough. His wide, devious grin held me mute.
You still turn as red as a tomato.
I hid my burning cheeks beneath my hands. Are you mad? Anyone to cross onto the terrace will see us. Alarm sped my pulse. I had to rid myself of his company post-haste, or else find myself subjected to it for the rest of my life. I dove into the cultivated foliage with twin fistfuls of my skirt to wrestle my train into behaving. It snagged on a stray branch within 10 seconds. Tears sprung to my eyes, but I blinked them away. Even the bushes conspired to keep me in his presence. I tugged myself free without care to the state of my dress. One small rip would make little difference. A deep chuckle drifted from behind me, followed by the crunch of booted steps. His breath teased the top of my head. The heat of his body added to the heavy humidity weighing down the summer air. My white slippers all but glowed in contrast to the soft dark loam at my feet. A beacon, biding me to wait for him to leave. But he didn't move away. Burying my annoyance, I whirled. My skirt twisted around my legs, and I nearly fell against him. He hovered less than a step away. Exasperation bubbled in my chest. You may not have a care for my reputation, but I'd thank you not to drag it through the mud. Or are you trying to trap me into marriage? The smug expression slipped from his face. He blinked noticeably. Odd how I suddenly noticed his thick eyelashes. Must be the proximity. He raised his hands, palms outward in surrender. The leather of his gloves bared an inch of skin at his wrists before his shirt covered the laps. I tore my gaze away from the tawny skin. More than his manner of dress earmarked him as different from the rest of the ton. He was tanned in places usually covered. A former soldier, perhaps. I shook the idle thought from my head. I didn't care. Slowly I eased one foot behind me, then another. A stray branch crackled under my toe.
I meant no disrespect, Francine.
I stumbled. He studied me, his gloved hands skimming over the bare flesh of my upper arms before taking a healthy step back. How do you know my name? He opened his mouth, but I raised a finger to stall him. Don't say you recall the name of every woman you kiss. A grin bloomed across his expressive mouth, the same mouth that had so recently caressed my skin.
Do you need another hint?
He leaned close. His breath teased the curve of my ear as he murmured.
As I recall, you are one of the three giggling girls to follow at my brother Joseph's heels.
My breath hitched. I eased back enough to meet his gaze. Julian? He nodded, confirming my suspicions. All traces of breath whooshed from my lungs. I don't believe it.
Chapter 2.
Julian Beckwith. The name, the man, conjured a surge of memories. Time spent romping the fields as children, getting into spats, playing pranks. After Papa had moved the family to London, I'd spent far too many days dreaming of when I might see Julian again. Over the years, that hope had dwindled, but now here he was, and I hadn't even recognized him. I threw my arms around his neck. I'd never crossed the bounds of propriety and embraced a man so intimately. If someone found us, I would be ruined. I didn't care. Julian was my oldest and dearest friend, and we hadn't seen each other in far too long, over 10 years. I clutched him tighter. The muscles in his shoulders bunched against my hands. His arms tightened around my waist like twin bands of iron, lifting me until my toes trailed over the ground, and he bore the brunt of my weight. The heat of his body surrounded me, sending tingles of awareness from every place we touched. His deep masculine chuckle tickled my ear.
I can't believe you didn't recognize me.
Can you blame me?
You didn't pull my hair or step on the back of my dress.
You haven't written in months. The muscles of his chest stiffened against my breasts.
That tingle of awareness morphed into a buzz of unease. The silence hung heavy between us.
I swallowed.
I'd long wondered if my repeated responses to his last letter hadn't reached him. The laden silence told me they had. He hadn't bothered to reply. I tried to push away, to return myself to the ground, but he buried his face in my neck and held me closer. I hadn't known that was possible. My body pressed against his from breast to belly, not a splinter of space in between. His warm breath teased the skin of my neck, raising goosebumps.
"I've missed you,"
he whispered. No trace of sarcasm or humor in his voice. Tears blurred my vision, obscuring the tree branches woven overhead. I blinked them away.
"I've missed you too,"
more than he knew. I clutched him back tight. Footsteps crunched over gravel, followed by a gasp.
"Francine!"
I flinched. Julian lifted his head from the crook of my neck. He lowered me to the ground, altogether too slowly. My body brushed against his on the way, renewing the tingles that swept through me. The second my slippers kissed the solid ground, I scrambled back and turned to face my mother. A smile teased the corner of her lips, though she tried to hide it behind a stern expression. I brushed invisible splotches of dirt from my gloves and pressed my lips together to keep from laughing. Mother had never in her life embodied the image of stern. Absent-minded, certainly, but never stern. The twinkle in her eye hinted that she wasn't nearly as angry to find me in the bushes with a man as a matchmaking mamma should be. I sidled a step farther from Julian. Perhaps she could be convinced to forget she ever saw our embrace. Did I have any irresistible plant specimens in my collection with which to bribe her? Julian stepped forward, a broad smile capping his face.
"Lady Valentia, how lovely to meet you again."
Mother's strict expression faded into puzzlement.
"I beg your pardon, but do I know you?"
Ha! I bit the inside of my cheek to keep from laughing. At least I wasn't the only person not to recognize him. I tried to reconcile the worldly man standing mere inches away with the gangly boy who used to tease me. I couldn't. Not a shred of that awkward boy remained, except maybe in the eyes. Then again, I hadn't seen him in over a decade, ever since Papa insisted we move to London permanently, which exposed me to fewer plants to fuel my budding eccentric ways.
"You may not remember," Julian said, stepping between me and Mother, and effectively shutting me from her view. "I was a good deal younger then. I'm Julian, Sir Benjamin's youngest son."
"Oh, yes."
Julian's broad shoulders blocked my view of Mother's expression, but dawning recognition lit her voice.
"How are your parents?"
Frankly, I was surprised she didn't ask after his garden.
"My father passed on a couple of years ago," Julian answered.
I recalled as much from his letters. I'd shared the news with Mother while we tended our plants in the hothouse, but she must not have recalled because she said,
"My condolences. And your mother?"
"Alive and well, I assure you."
Although I couldn't see Julian's face, his smile was evident from his warm voice.
"She remained in Leicestershire to dote upon her first grandson."
"How lovely. She must be thrilled."
"I certainly would be."
I winced. Hunching behind Julian's form did little to dispel the weight of her pointed words. He took her by the elbow and steered her out of the shade of the trees toward the terrace. He lowered his head to meet hers in a tête-à-tête. His voice softened a notch with the intimacy, but his words still carried to my position.
"As you know, Francine and I have been apart for so long. We would dearly love a few moments in private to catch up."
To my astonishment, Mother answered, "Of course." Granted, she'd never raised a head from her plants long enough to force a chaperone on me, but I'd still thought she cared more for propriety than this. She raised her voice as she addressed me. "But Francine, dear, do come inside within 5 minutes, or I'll have to send your father out after you." Reaching the terrace steps, she bid Julian goodbye and slipped inside. I leaned against the nearest tree, a spindly specimen, Betula pendula. Even a skinny birch held me upright better than my quaking knees. As Julian approached, I pushed away from the trunk. My knees quavered, but held my weight. I brushed past him.
I have to go after her.
He ensnared my arm and hauled me off the lit path again, into the deeper shadows. I stumbled into his chest. The warmth of his body was a reminder of the embrace Mother had witnessed. My body reacted instantly with a surge of sensation. I didn't understand why, so I ignored it in favor of my mounting panic.
We all have meddling mothers, he said with a laugh.
He didn't understand. Mine didn't meddle. She didn't seek out suitable dance partners or announce my hefty dowry to a room full of peers. Until now. Did I imagine the humorous twinkle in his eye? Likely a reflection from the lamps anchored at intervals throughout the garden. He leaned closer.
You worry too much. You always have.
His low, teasing voice made me shiver. Caution was a prudent, evolutionary trait. I hadn't accrued near the amount of scrapes and broken bones he had as a child. In fact, I could lay the blame for the bulk of my injuries at his reckless feet. In my opinion, I didn't worry enough. I shook my head.
You don't understand. If Mother blurts that she found us together, everyone will assume the worst.
He crossed his arms over his chest. The muscles of his arms strained against the dark grey fabric of his jacket in two unyielding bands. Another clue he didn't fit in. No men of the ton sported arms like his. As though they actually performed physical labour.
Which is?
His drawl drew my attention back to his face. My cheeks blazed like a furnace. I resisted the urge to cover them. Hopefully the shade helped to hide my heightened colour.
They'll think we're lovers, of course.
I cringed at his loud guffaw. Was it so unbelievable? Granted, most men of the ton likely agreed. I hadn't been asked to dance for most of the season. Then again, Mary dressing down every man to peer in our direction might play a factor as well.
We're childhood friends, Julian said with a laugh.
That excuse only applied when we were children. We could stand on opposite sides of a ballroom, but so long as we are alone, the ton will assume you've compromised me.
That's ludicrous. I shrugged.
'Tis the views of society. I can't very well change them, though Mary often opted to try and drag me along with her. I stepped toward the terrace, my heart hammered in my chest. What if I was already too late? Mine wasn't exactly the most discreet of mothers. Julian stopped me again.
Stay here.
I threw my arms in the air.
I've already explained why I can't.
I'll go.
His words stopped me short. They matched the determined expression on his face. He meant it. I shook my head.
I wasn't thinking when I embraced you out in the open like this. I can fix this myself.
He lifted one eyebrow in a cocky expression.
Are you any better at hiding your blushes now than you were as a child?
Why?
When your mother blurts our encounter to your father loud enough for half the room to hear, I hope you would have the good grace to hide your guilt.
My cheeks blazed. I wouldn't be surprised if they started to glow like the sun. I balled my fists at the infuriating grin on his face.
As I suspected, he murmured.
I waited, but he didn't budge an inch toward the terrace doors through which my mother had disappeared. Very well, I said. My voice was smooth and serene, in direct conflict with the turbulent pulsing of my heart. You may come to my rescue this once.
He remained rooted in place, but his grin widened. If I help, I'll expect a favour in return.
My mouth dropped open.
You must be jesting. This is your fault. If you hadn't interfered, I'd be far deeper in the garden and...
Ah!
He held his hand in the air.
A favour, or I'll let your mother expose us both.
You wouldn't.
My reputation wouldn't be irreparably damaged. I'd return to life in Leicestershire, and have a good reason never to visit London again.
I narrowed my eyes. I wonder if your mother would think the same. Smiling, he ignored the bluff. He didn't seem at all concerned with being caught. There it was, the difference between being a man and a woman. The freedom he took for granted. Not that he would emerge as unscathed as he seemed to think. Not once Papa learned of the scandal, which he certainly would if Mother had her way. My heart beat thrice as fast. Name your favor.
A dance.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?